Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. A warm midsummer's day stroll through the Grantchester meadows beside the River Cam should have been the idyllic setting for an interview of Nick Hallacy, deputy editor of Country Walking magazine. A professional walker and writer who has an encyclopedic knowledge of walking routes throughout Britain, for many, including me, his must be the dream job. But as he reveals, it's not just endless walks in the beautiful countryside. There's research and meticulous preparation, neither of which I appear to have done for this walk. In addition, there are office-bound days, prepping monthly issues of the magazine. We're also accompanied by a photographer, as Nick is keen to use images from her walk in a future feature. It's an experience I've not encountered before. So tell me, how long have you been involved at Country Walking magazine?
I've been involved with Country Walking for 10 years, and they've been 10 really wonderful years, actually. Nowhere else I'd rather be. I joined in 2007, after I'd worked for about 10 years in local newspapers in York, Cheshire and Essex, but I'd always been interested in walking because it was drilled into me from a very young age by my lovely parents. Eventually we reached a point where I'd sort of hit a confluence of journalism and going for a walk, and there it was, Country Walking, just the right time and space in my life with my wife, I guess.
Okay, and so whereabouts, you know, did that all happen?
I did most of my growing up in Cheshire. So after I left university, I really wasn't sure what to do with myself, as I'm sure many people aren't.
But you're at Cambridge in the sort of the flatlands.
Yes.
And then you went to work in the hills, but you'd actually been brought up in the hills.
Brought up in the hills because, well, my parents had got into walking when they actually lived in Sussex when I was born. And so those big green bumpy things, the South Downs, were not too far from their house. So over the course of a couple of summers when I was 4 and 5, they set out to do South Downs Way in different stages.
And you went too.
And I was dragged along too, which was wonderful.
What was it at the time? Do you actually remember when, at an early age, was going for a walk with your parents a wonderful thing?
Yes, it absolutely was. It's funny, you ask it like that, and I know that it might not sound it, but It's a funny thing because I've got I have a huge nostalgia memory, and probably I wear the rose-tinted spectacles of optimism a lot, but they were amazing times, I think. My father got transferred from Gatwick Airport to Manchester Airport, and at that point, on his sixth-floor office block, he could see hills, and he kept asking people, what's that? And they said, that's the Peak District, you've got to get out there, it's lovely. And then other people kept saying, oh, got to go to the Lake District as well. And South Manchester, North Cheshire was just a beautiful spot because within a couple of hours, you know, we could be in the Lake District, we could be in Yorkshire, we could be in Snowdonia.
You couldn't quite walk out of the family home into the countryside, but you weren't that far away.
Not quite, no. I mean, I was in Knutsford, so that was quite a rural area. And, you know, as soon as you sort of got a little bit of away from my house, you could look out across the Cheshire Plain. And you could see Jodrell Bank Radio Telescope.
So how soon did you go off walking on your own?
Sort of growing up on the edge of a rural area, me and my school friends would often, you know, sort of disappear off across the woodlands, and in common with, I guess, many people, many schools at the time, we were very lucky to have a teacher who was hugely into, you know, getting young people into the outdoors. And he would organise day trips, get the minibus at 7:20 at the Davenham roundabout on the A556 just outside Northwich. And then, you know, he would sort of make it up as he went along. It would either be usually Snowdonia, sometimes the lakes if he could be bothered, but he was a huge, huge fan of Snowdonia. Pitch up at the bottom of Trefam, and he'd say, right, go on then, pick a route, and off you'd go. And I've spoken to him recently, and, you know, he laments the fact that, of course, these days, red tape, health and safety, whatever your view on it, for a good thing or bad thing, wouldn't allow that. You know, if you were going to go and climb Trefan, you'd have to be doing it with an organised outward bound group or whatever, with associated costs and stayover fees and all sorts. So that was it, and that sort of got us into the idea of doing that. And yeah, the sort of landmarks of life I can remember that, you know, we... And I'm not mentioning the teacher's name, not because I don't want to pay tribute, but also to protect him, because, you know, we would end up in pubs at the end of this.
I think that's fairly common too.
And so. I can remember being in the Royal Oak, I think, in Bettersea Coed, and everyone's like, Ayrton Senna's dead. You know, and so everyone's gathered around the telly in the pub watching this. And, you know, there were, you know, other big moments that... You know, you're sort of defined by the fact that I was somewhere unusual when they happened, you know?
So are you one of these lucky people that can remember every walk you've taken?
I am a little bit of a geek in that respect. It sort of continues in the magazine recently, really, because I'm the one that people say, when did we do that thing with the guy with the nice picture of this? And generally I'll be the one saying, oh, that was July 2011.
So tell us, what's a typical week for a Country Walking magazine deputy editor?
Far more of the time is spent in the office than is actually outdoors, because obviously you're producing a magazine, you're writing content, you're editing, you're commissioning, you're checking, proofreading, and it's only a small team. There's the editor, there's myself, there's a features editor and a feature writer, then you've got a designer and a production editor, and that's basically it, pulling this thing of lovely beauty together 13 times a year.
And how many pages does it run to?
Usually 132, sometimes 124, but the final section of the magazine is taken up with 27 route cards, covering the entire country as best we can.
And are those routes that you yourselves have devised, or are they routes that you've got sort of a whole band of professional route makers or...
That's
or
it.
Volunteers,
yes.
Or readers? How does
exactly
it work?
That. We have an absolute army of... the loveliest people you could hope to be in touch with, who are people who just love going for a walk, like to write about it, will make a little bit of money of submitting routes to us. They are just full of ideas. They know about their local patch, but also, you know, they might ring us up and say, I'm going to the Norfolk Broads next week, would you like a couple of routes from there? Then of course we've got a massive admin challenge of going through our spreadsheets and going, right, when did we last have a route here? When was that? What's this route they're proposing? Will they overlap? The readers will know. You know, it's like they've had one like this in 2 months ago. So we need to be on our toes with that.
And what defines a country walk?
A very good point. Very good point.
Are we on one now? We're actually walking down... I think we're walking down Marish Lane towards the River Cam. We're on a highway pavement. But are we in the country? Will we ever be in the country today?
I would say yes. It's a funny one because we have a lovely relationship with towns and cities. We tend to find whenever we cover, you know, city and town walks, that they become very, very popular. One of the best, the equivalent of a radio phone-in where we ask the readers something. We used to sometimes still do ask, you know, what are your top 10 recommendations for such and such a place? And we said, what's the best city for walking? And the postbag on it, the email inbox, was colossal. You know, with people advocating not just Bath, Bristol, York, Edinburgh, but particular walks that they loved. The fact that it wasn't perhaps all greenery all the way was neither here nor there. One important thing to build in at this point in terms of what is a country walk is that in the last year and a half, our biggest success... the thing that has really bucked the industry trend as far as magazines are concerned and given us a serious uplift is this campaign, Walk 1,000 Miles, where we've simply challenged the public in general, can you walk 1,000 miles in the course of a calendar year? The people that this has brought into the magazine are people who previously would never have thought, I need a magazine to help me go walking or whatever. It's just an incentive.
You've got new subscribers from it, but do you feel that actually you've got people who haven't walked before walking?
Yes, I think we really, really have. I don't say this lightly. The testimonies that we've had from people are extraordinary. You know, they are using the word changing my life.
Do you encourage people to walk from the towns, or do you encourage people to sort of drive to somewhere and then go for a walk?
That is a very good point, because for many, many a year, the sort of ethos of the magazine was go away, drive somewhere and go for a walk. And that's why, I mean, the shortest distance usually of our routes in our magazines is 5 miles. because we thought that, you know, if you're going to drive any distance, you're probably not going to do it to do a 2.5 mile walk. But also just the whole sense of just being out there. It's funny because we're kind of lumbered with the headline Country Walking and the title, because that's the title of the magazine. You could probably call the magazine Walking and leave it at that, because exactly as you say, if someone lives in an urban area but they know that there is something peri-urban, a bit of concrete, but if they know that it takes them to an old canal or an abandoned railway line that's been, you know, tracked over, something that engages them with greenery in some way. And I think the uplift, I mean, you and I know, you know, we've been to conferences on this whole subject, that the sense of engagement with a hedgerow, a tree, a clear bit of sky, a field path, you know, no matter where it is something that is, it's healthy, it's releasing the endorphins, it has all those positive health effects that we know about. And that's fantastic.
And do you write about sort of well-being and health in the magazine? Or
we do, but we do it carefully, because I think you can drench, you know, people with that too much. I think they've got the idea that going out for a walk is good for me. But then I think just carefully deployed, you know, we put a poster of the walking iceberg, and just all the effects, you know, sort of above and below the waterline, the things that you do and don't know about in the simple act of going for a walk. And it got shared on social media into the tens of thousands of times. All you could see was people just sharing, just putting someone else's name on the bottom of it. Off it goes. You know, that's gone to someone else to say, look, you could do this. As I say, we don't want to drench people with, you must go out in order to do this and to fend off plantar fasciitis and to fend off dementia or whatever. All that is happening. But at the same time, I think the first thing they're going for is just the general revitalising uplift of being on a walk, of seeing something nice, of being able to have a guilt-free pint of beer, massive coffee, lovely piece of cake, you know, whatever. The fun side of walking, I think, is the driver, and the health benefits are just the most lovely side effect.
Obviously, you're not the Ramblers, and they publish Walk magazine.
They do.
I know. Are you flag-flying anything for maintaining rights of way or improving the countryside? Or
we'll cover those issues in our news section occasionally, but A, we know how well Walk do that, and if people have got a real interest in those issues, which are absolutely right and valid, then they will probably will engage with the Ramblers in some form. I think we're not a political magazine. We're about joy, we're about encouragement, we're about telling stories, the history and heritage and culture and wildlife and food and drink around the landscapes of Britain.
How many walks do you get paid to walk for Country Walking magazine?
I'm out on a full day's walk, I would say 5 or 6 times a month is probably about right. Because obviously I have to be office-based, I'm a writer and a content editor. So I am in the office.
And do you take notes while you're walking? How do you do it? Do you record it? Do you dictaphone it? Do you sort of have a voice recorder like we're using at the moment?
If I'm doing the route description for a route card, then yes, I'll narrate into just the voice memos app on my phone. In terms of the actual feature content, no, I'm pretty lucky. Again, my very oddly retentive memory comes into play, and I can tell you an awful lot about all the walks I've done. I would say 90% of what I would choose to talk about in the walk is sorted in the research, because you have to obviously really find out what you're going to do. Your time is limited, the photographer time may be limited as well. You want to maximise the time that you've got. So we really, really work to hone what the route is going to be and what we want it to cover.
So how much prep do you have to do before you go for a walk?
The prep for one of our walking away trips, where we might do 2 or 3 days away and different walks on each, you're looking at the best part of a full day to plan what is happening with each of those. With the best one in the world you can't plan for is sudden surprises. You know, the things that you come across that you think, oh, this has got to go in the feature, the reader's got to know about this. Then you're into sort of a quick shorthand note or a quick note on the phone.
And how many words is a feature?
It varies. Generally run up to a sort of, I believe, about 400 words per page. So a sort of 6-page main feature could be anywhere between sort of 1,200 and 2,500. But it tends to be organic because, you know, it's obviously got to be a real marriage of the words and the photos. And if the pictures are absolutely blinding, then the art editor is really going to want to make the best use of those. So you might end up sort of self-editing a little bit to sort of make way for those. But also you can't just be pretty pictures, so, you know, you've got to really have a story and something that's worth the reader's time and investing. So that's a balance to be struck.
And where do your readers read your magazine? Is it on the toilet or is it in the dental reception waiting room?
It's a great read on the toilet. I can thoroughly vouch for that.
Now, how is it that people are still buying magazines and subscribing to magazines? Aren't they a thing of the past or are they having a bit of a revival?
I think they are enjoying the situation of being a luxury item. You can equate it with newspapers, in which a field I've also worked in. In which you buy a newspaper now to find out what happened yesterday, when there are a million websites out there just aching to tell you what's happening right now. So I think newspapers have a greater difficulty, you know, in terms of what the digital offering is. And you can see that in the way Rupert Murdoch will charge for access to his websites. The Daily Mail is umming and ahhing about it. The Guardian flags up huge yellow banners saying, please support us with money. Magazines are a luxury item that people like to take time to sit down and to look through. And they know, they can be reasonably sure, there might be other magazines covering the same topic, but there's not an online offering that immediately does what we do. Yes, you can find walks online if you want to, but it's the idea of curation. That's the big thing.
How do you manage to turn people who you find on social media into becoming subscribers?
That was, and again, I have to invoke this thing.
You're pointing to your badge. We have to say it's Walk 1,000 Miles.
So we had this huge 22,000 people on our Facebook, and then it was cross your fingers time, because we've had big, you know, lots of magazines have big social media campaigns, but they don't always translate into read.
Yeah.
Because without hard sell, the suggestion was, if you're enjoying this campaign, if you like this idea, you know, find out more about it and get ideas for where to go in this magazine, which we think you might like. And they did. And that was the moment, you know, we suddenly sales that were 60% up, you know, around about the launch of this thing. And they're sort of keeping to that steady uptake.
What would you go out for a walk with? And what wouldn't you leave behind?
Good footwear. Can't really go wrong. But even a walk like this, where we're mostly on, as you say, tarmac footpaths, or we'd be down by the river on a field path, I'd still wear a stoutish pair of shoes or boots. You know, I know that I can quite happily splash these through a puddle or the, you know, flooded edge of a field or what have you, and the feet will stay dry. That's terrific. I'd always wear, even if it wasn't a warm day, I'd never wear a cotton shirt, just because I just hate the way they sweat through. So usually some sort of polyester t-shirt base layer type thing works beautifully. Merino is a lovely fabric for that, merino wool. Quite happily wore a merino the other day in the heat, but even better in the cold weather. And a rucksack. This, the one I'm wearing today, is a bit overkill for the walk that we're doing. It's a 25 litre rucksack, I think. But I think, you know, just to throw in a waterproof, a warm layer, a bit of lunch. I never leave without a head torch, because you never know when you're going to find a cave that's worth going to have a look in, so I've always got one of those. I'll always carry a compass. And this is another interesting area in the magazine, you know, you don't want to create barriers to walking, to say you have to have a compass to go for a walk. But, you know, if you are doing something wilder, higher, more difficult, then having that backup is a damn good thing. I mean, I've got mapping apps on my phone, so I'll always know, in theory, where I am. But a map never runs out of its batteries, and a compass never loses signal, so always worth having. And I think of a rucksack, the one I'm wearing has a suspended mesh back, which means that the load is pushed away from your back, and you've got a sort of aerated mesh that sits near your back, and that simply means that you just don't get a horrible sweaty mess on your back.
What I also ask people is to recommend walks.
By all means, ask me for a walk. I mean, jeepers. Someone with a geek mentality like me is someone who's always working on their top five films, and, you know, that's going to change around all the time. But if you ask me today, Lake District, I would say, if you want to understand why people fall in love with the Lake District, you should get the Keswick launch out of Keswick to Hawes End on the other side of Derwent Water, and walk up and over Catbells down to the Brandleholme jetty and get the launch back to Keswick. Perfect and beautiful day, particularly if it's a summer's day. But then I would also say, for peace and quiet. It's very hard to beat a lovely little place called Paglesham out in the far reaches of eastern Essex. Not too far from Southend, but utterly quiet, you know, by the confluence of the rivers Roach and Crouch. Silent, and little red-sailed Thames barges going past you. It's beautiful. That's one of my favourite places to go. I'm a huge fan of the Peak District, and you don't necessarily have to go big and high to find something lovely in the Peak District. There's a lovely hidden valley that I've just written about in the magazine called Bretton Clough, which is somewhere between Eam, the plague village, and, well, the Hope Valley, really. And hardly anybody knows this thing is there, and there's nothing in it, and it's beautiful, apart from a really nice pub called The Barrel up at the top, and the gliding club, and that's all there is, and it's lovely.
And one last thing, because I'm sort of collecting what I think is walking wisdom. So what piece of wisdom, advice, recommendation, something that you came across that you hadn't heard of recently and thought, that rang a bell?
That's a really interesting one. That I'd need to think about, because, you know, there are all sorts of, you know, salutary lessons, and I'll give you two. Actually, good. The first is, and I decided if I ever have anything interesting enough to say about my life, that my autobiography would be called You Can't Buy Pants in Bakewell, which is that I was going on a 3-day walk starting in Bakewell in the Peak District, beautiful part of the world, and I got there and realised that in my overnight bags I had nowhere, anywhere packed any kind of pair of pants. So I thought, there'll be a little shop that will, you know, sell me a 3-pack of boxers or whatever. There wasn't. And so the only pair of pants I could find was a pair of merino boxer shorts for £26. So that's my wisdom, that if you're going to Bakewell and you're going to spend more than a few days there, take pants. But the other one I would say is just a more general and perhaps sentimental point, which is try and make a difference to someone's life through going for a walk with them. We started this conversation with two lovely people, my parents, insisting that their 4-year-old was going to come and do these hills with them. And I could not be more grateful for that. And I try and inflict it on my children as well. And I have no idea if it will stick with them, but I would love it if it did. But then to translate across to the social media things, when you just see people just posting the words, Tracy Sutton, see this. You know, anything that just tells other people that there is this lovely, free, happy activity that you can do. You don't need the most expensive rucksack. You don't need the most expensive boots. You can be in a pair of sandals or trainers once, just to get you started. Try and make a difference to someone's life through walking, and I think you and they will reap the benefit.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. In this episode, you've heard from Nick Hallisey. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we'd love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of Easytronic.